This is episode 78 of the Fifth Estate Podcast. Brad Moss and the Devin Nunez Memo. It is time for another episode of The Fifth Estate. My name is Jay Caruso. I'm here with my co-host, Mrs. Amy Otto. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jay. How are you doing tonight?
All right. How's the weather there in the Pacific Northwest? You getting any snow or anything?
No. It's been unconscionably rainy, though.
Oh, has it?
It was raining so bad. I looked out my window the other day. I'm like, it feels like I could swim outside.
Oh.
I'm going to need to get away to visit some sun soon.
Yeah, it's been the ridiculously cold weather has gone away from the Dallas area. I mean, we were like, I was getting up some mornings, it was like 8 degrees in Texas. But it's been very sunny and everything. But it's supposed to get cold again starting beginning of this week. So the people at the office are saying, no, you've got another, you know, it can snow in March. So there's a couple more months of cold before, then I'll start complaining about how hot it is in April. Speaking of hot, this podcast is hot. It's better when you go to iTunes, though. One of the things that, we always talk about this every episode. You know, go out there, give us a rating, give us a review. It feeds our egos. We kind of like it, but it also helps on the iTunes factor. So, you know, they take into consideration subscribers and downloads, but also ratings, reviews, things of that nature. So the more that we get, the better it is for us. So go out to iTunes, you know, even if you don't have time to leave us a detailed review, you can at least leave a star rating, and that helps us out. So, and Amy really likes it.
I do. Yeah. I love feedback.
See that, folks? That's for you. Leave her some feedback. All right. So moving along to the stories of the week, two big stories. First, of course, was the State of the Union address, which I think everybody was expecting this kind of big shit show, and that didn't happen. Trump actually gave a decent speech, and Democrats just wound up, and then just giving a quick summary. Democrats just wound up looking very stupid, just constantly sitting on their hands, you know, and it was ridiculous. The thing was long. You know, I think Jimmy Fallon joked that, it was like 10 minutes less than like Bill Clinton's longest address. And so like when Trump found that out, he grabbed a computer and started reading the iTunes like legal agreement to kind of go ahead of him. It's just kind of a joke like that. But the other big news, of course, was today all this buildup, all this hype over the last few weeks with
I'd argue, was it big news?
Release the memo hashtag. You know, it was Republican. There were people I shouldn't say all Republicans, but people promising this was like the biggest thing that was ever going to happen. You had Democrats on the other side saying, oh, my God, if this gets released, it was like they were thinking, you know, they were making it seem like people were going to die. You can't do this. And then it gets released, and I'm not a lawyer, so there are certain things. I mean, it wasn't written like a legal document; it was written like a memo. And I did read it, and I was going through it. But there's people that know more about it than I do. But I didn't get a sense there was anything major revealed here. There might be some stuff that raises some questions, but is it raised the questions on the behalf of the FBI or on the laws that they are, you know, tasked to enforce? You know, and I think Amy, you said mentioned something about that. We'll get into that with our guests. So we wanted somebody who kind of knew about these things. And today on Twitter, I had recommended, you know, you have people that were split. Of course, you know, there were people who were saying this was like the most horrible thing. You had people saying this was absolutely nothing, but you've harmed national security, blah, blah, blah. And there are people who kind of look at this stuff holistically and just, you know, with a kind of measured tone and say, okay, this is bad, this is good, this is bad, whatever. So Gabe Maller, Paterico, and our guest, Brad Moss, ESQ. You know, he's one of those guys that has, you know, he's one of those guys that has to put ESQ, you know, in his Esquire in his Twitter handle, right, Brad?
Hey, you know what? I sold my soul and I went through all that effort to get the law degree and get the ESQ. I'm putting it everywhere.
Well, Brad Moss is also one of the other ones that I suggest you follow. He's been a guest on the Fifth Estate before. And so we asked him to be on. He was, you know, kind enough to do that, even though he's got a runoff. He's got a TV appearance tonight, but he's made some time for us to kind of discuss this and just to get an overall viewpoint of it from a legal perspective. But again, from somebody who's not just, you know, knee jerk response in all of this. In fairness, Brad has been, you know, very critical of the Trump administration and probably critical of Devin Nunes. I would put him probably more on that side. But at the same time, he's not a rabid partisan. So it's not, it doesn't come out like that. But so, Brad, just to kind of kick things off here, what, just for people who really, and there haven't been people who are following the story in all of its detail, but give us an overall assessment of, you know, what was in the memo and why is it important and, you know, just kind of a brief, like 50,000 foot view of everything.
Sure. Not a problem, Jay. So here's what we've got. The memo confirms what we had already known pretty much through media reports, but that the government had never previously confirmed. It outlined how the Justice Department in late October of 2016, right before the election, I think it's 3 weeks before the election, goes to the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, and submits an application for a warrant to surveil Carter Page. Everyone knows Carter Page was this eccentric, you know, kind of out there volunteer advisor to the Trump campaign that the campaign said that he had nothing to do with us beyond a few weeks where he was in one press release with the president about a foreign policy advisory council. He never talked to Trump. He had no interactions with Trump. He was a nobody. So the DOJ gets this FISA warrant against Carter Page after Carter Page has already left the Trump campaign. He was someone who the FBI had already known about from years earlier, from 2013, when he had been suspected of communicating with Russian intelligence operatives. So they submitted an application. Now, a FISA application is a lengthy document. It's, you know, 50 to 100 pages long. It includes affidavits from senior FBI agents outlining the probable cause determination. It would include documentation from senior DOJ lawyers. It would be signed off on by the attorney general or the deputy attorney general, someone of that seniority. It's a very serious thing to even seek a FISA warrant, let alone to submit this package and let alone to get it and to have that type of authority. So they submitted this to surveil Carter Page, and they got a couple extensions of it. So what the memo is going into it, the real issue that the memo has is how the DOJ outlined the probable cause determination. So everybody knows, you know, just from common sense and from watching Law and Order for all these years, that, you know, when the cops go to get a search warrant for something, they have to have probable cause that you've committed a crime or something along those lines. FISA works a little bit differently. The way the statute was set up is that you have to produce probable cause that the target is a foreign power or an agent of a foreign power. And if the person is an American citizen, the definition for agent of foreign power means that they have to knowingly be engaged in clandestine intelligence activities for a foreign government in a manner that violates U.S. criminal statutes. And these warrants are only good for 90 days. And then you have to get them renewed with a brand new application, a brand new probable cause determination. And so the memo's issue is how the DOJ relied to an extent on the Steele dossier, which we now know was funded, you know, through multiple layers of complexity by the Hillary Clinton campaign through a private firm, which hires, you know, Fusion GPS and subcontracts it out to Mr. Steele, who is this former British intelligence operative who now is doing freelance investigative work. So the FBI and the DOJ had relied upon the Steele dossier and its claims to some extent to justify probable cause against Mr. Page. And the memo is concerned about to what extent the DOJ properly informed the judge of biases held by Mr. Steele, the idea that he was particularly distasteful and had a serious issue with Mr. Trump, that he was being paid by a firm that had been hired by the Clinton campaign, you know, through the DNC, things along those lines. They don't actually allege any violation of law by DOJ so much as it outlines what they view as concerns about how this was all pulled together and if this was all a political hatchet job to spy on the Trump campaign somehow. And that's where we are today.
All right. Okay, great. So that's a great summary of everything. So, all right. So now to talk about some of the things that I've read, you know, where people are just like, you know, kind of freaking out. I'm not even going to name names on here. I'm just going to read what some people have said or tweeted. So here's two. All right. So it says, so we now know there was collusion between the FBI, the media, and Hillary's team. We also know there was obstruction by senior leaders of the DOJ and the FBI who knowingly misled the FISA court. Shameful. Another one reads, not only did the memo lay bare a systematic pattern of abuse within the FBI and DOJ, it confirmed my worst fear. America's free and fair elections were being threatened from within. Our own DOJ worked to tip the scales of justice in order to benefit one political candidate. You know, if, again, from what I've read, from a layman's perspective, I mean, none of that was established in this memo. I mean, I don't know where they get this from. What's your overall assessment of the memo? So you've given us what it's all about. What do you think? What does the memo tell us? What's your overall assessment? Just again, this is like a 50,000 foot view, and then we'll get into more detail.
Sure. I mean, what it shows us is, okay, look, there was concern about the activities of Carter Page. There was concern about the extent to which he was engaging in some type of clandestine activity, intelligence activity for the Russian government. He had been worried about for years, but they made sure not to surveil him, not to seek this warrant while he was affiliated with the Trump campaign. If anything, what this memo shows us is how careful DOJ was not to spy on the Trump campaign. They wait till October 21st, 2016, like 3 weeks before the election and weeks after the Trump campaign has officially said Carter Page is no longer affiliated with us. They wait until then to first seek this warrant. This shows us just how careful they were to avoid, you know, crossing that very sensitive line and to make sure they weren't doing anything that could potentially be viewed as spying on a political candidate, which would be in and of itself very sensitive.
Well, and I guess, you know, my following question is that what are the things missing from the memo that would help us actually understand what the basis for the FISA warrants were? Because it feels like there's some pieces, but there may be more. And you know, because that's what it's like, who can decide what's going on right now unless we actually know what the basis for the warrants were?
The biggest thing missing from this memo, and mind you, this is a 3-page memo summarizing 50 something pages of an application. But the biggest thing missing from it is, what was the probable cause of termination? They were able to convince the federal judge that Carter Page was knowingly engaging in a clandestine intelligence activity that was violating a criminal statute. What was the criminal statute? Was it money laundering? Was it conspiring to violate Computer Fraud Protection Act? Was it to illegally funnel campaign funds? What was it? The memo doesn't say. That would be huge to know what it was about Carter Page that had so concerned DOJ that they kept coming back for more information about him. What was it about his intelligence gathering activities that's so concerned DOJ? That's not laid out in this memo, but I guarantee you that's laid out in the affidavits and in the application itself.
All right, great. So this is going to take a quick break here. The word from our sponsor, we'll be right back with Brad Moss. So we're going to talk to you about Man Crates. So, you know, Man Crates is it's kind of like a gift box kind of thing, but it's really original. You know, this is not your usual type of gift that, you know, you gals can get for your guy, your husband, your boyfriend or something like that. You know, you can get a gift that's pretty awesome. So I've got this gift. I got one of the gifts from Man Crates, and it's a knife, and it has your initials in it, And it actually comes in this, in, you know, you can kind of like where you put it away is like a book. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Shawshank Redemption, you know, when you open the book and the pickaxe is there. Well, the knife is in there. It's really cool. They have other stuff too, food, coffee, but all coming in a, you know, very unique type of packaging. So what do you do? Mancrates.com. Okay. It's where you can get some awesome gifts that guys love. It's not some kind of cologne sampler or goofy mug. Man Crates offers a curated gift collection for every type of guy, from the sports fanatic to the home chef to the outdoorsman. Yes, you can actually get a chef's knife. They got a nice chef's knife gift. Check out classics like the NFL Barware Crate and the Whiskey Appreciation Crate, or fresh takes on traditional Valentine's gifts like the jerky heart or the salami bouquet. Go to mancrates.com, pick the perfect gift, then wait for that magic moment. He'll fall head over heels when his gift arrives, and he gets to pry the wooden crate open with the included crowbar. They have thousands of five-star reviews, and every gift comes with complete satisfaction guaranteed. So look, here's what you do. Go to mancrates.com/fifth. You get 5% off. They don't offer a discount anywhere else. Get 5% off right now at mancrates.com/fifth. One more time, that is mancrates.com/fifth. And we're back. So, okay, so why wouldn't they include that, though? Can they, or do they know? I mean, well, obviously, somebody was it Trey Gowdy read the application, so he must know.
Because it harms their narrative. The narrative they wanted to bring out of this, and now... I mean, there's politics that are absolutely at play here. You know, I don't want to assume complete, utter bad faith on behalf of any particular.
Yeah, narrative. I wouldn't assume that they're even smart enough to have a narrative. So they may just have forgotten.
But I mean, there's a level of political blocking and tackling here, somewhat in defense of the president, trying to muddy the waters, trying to make it so that no matter what comes out of this investigation by the special counsel, that there's a portion of the population that'll never view it as credible, that will think it was all predicated on this political opposition research done by Steele on behalf of the DNC, and they'll never believe any of it. They'll think it's all a political hit job. And so by doing this memo this way and just laying out the parts, these cherry-picked pieces of information that they think will look bad to the general public, they set that narrative without getting into what it was that was actually the real merits and the real substance of the application. You would hope... You know, there's this Democratic counter memo that's apparently going to be getting released at some point. I believe the speaker said he's fine with it getting published, assuming it goes through the same process that the Nunes memo just went through. Hopefully that'll lay out in a little bit more detail what it was that truly was the merits, truly was the issue of concern, because that would give us a sense of, was Carter Page part of some quote unquote, you know, collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians, or was he an issue on his own? Was he just engaged in activities that he never should have been part of the campaign, but the aspect of intelligence, clandestine intelligence activities had nothing to do with Trump himself? All those issues should be clarified, but they aren't here, because this is not about the true facts of what occurred. This is about a political narrative.
So, yeah. Oh, okay, so was there anything, when you looked at the memo, Brad, was there anything in there that concerned you from the aspect of, you know, from even like, you know, Trey Gowdy today was pretty low key about what this memo did, you know, and he said, hey, there's some stuff in there that I didn't like, but he basically said, I still have faith in those guys and all this other kind of thing. And, you know, he basically was not, if anybody's going to be upset, it'd probably be Devin Nunes would be upset at Trey Gowdy, because he just wasn't out there thinking, you know, like Paul Gosar, who's out there saying that, you know, people in the memo should be indicted for treason. Gowdy was pretty low key, but is there anything that you looked at that maybe you thought, that's a little fishy, or that's a little odd, or something's not right there? Anything that you could get from the memo that said that to you, or no?
Some stuff that kind of reaffirmed our, you know, prior concerns that even those of us who are critics of the president could still have issues with, you know, the behavior by Bruce Orr. Maybe he was truly on the level. Maybe this is just an issue of appearance. But the activities of Bruce Orr in particular, who is the Associate Deputy Attorney General at the time, walk a very fine line between what is and is not ethical. He was coming right up on the line. He's just way too close to this. You know, he probably was fine from a pure legal standpoint, But it's one of those situations of, given how sensitive it was, he really should have taken himself away from this particular portion of the investigation, because it raises the appearance of impropriety. Even if it wasn't anything improper, it looks bad. And when it's a situation like this where it ultimately involves the president, it's about politics, all you need is that appearance for it to harm the credibility of the investigation. That's the one thing that I think I took from this that was truly of legitimate concern, is the activities of Bruce Orr.
Okay, and then what? So here's something else, and I don't know if you can rebut this or not. But Devin Nunes was on Special Report tonight with Brett Baer, and apparently said something along the line. Nunes said the only thing that's been verified in the dossier is that Russia is a country and that Carter Page is a person. Now here's the question about the dossier, because this whole thing. There are some people that make the dossier all about the supposed pee tapes or whatever, you know, the peeing episodes. Uh-huh. But there are other people who are saying, look, there was some valid stuff within this dossier that, you know, people are saying that James Comey said it was salacious and unverified. And then somebody pointed out it was Paderico, actually, who said, hey, that's not what Comey said. Comey said that he had briefed President Trump on the parts of the dossier that were salacious and unverified. And I'm assuming that's the pee stuff that Sean Hannity and others seem to love to talk about often. But, apparently, didn't the memo confirm that the dossier was used in part to gain the FISA warrant? And in that respect, isn't there something in there that has to be credible?
Well, yes. Yeah. So to be clear here, beyond this memo, the government's never confirmed or denied in any context whether or not they've even vetted the dossier or any part of it. Actually, I, along with my boss, Mark Zaid, we've been running a FOIA lawsuit on behalf of Josh Gerstein over at Politico. We sued for any records reflecting an investigation into the merits of the dossier, and particularly the findings that were in that two-page synopsis that Director Comey used to brief then-President-elect Trump. And the government refused to confirm or deny that there even were records, saying it doesn't matter what the president had said publicly, because the president has come out and said, oh, the dossier is discredited, it's fake. They said, we've never confirmed or denied any investigation into it. And the president's comments don't reflect that he knows that he's relying upon government information. He could be just relying on what he sees on, you know, Fox and Friends in the morning. And the judge agreed with the government so far, saying the president's statements are too vague, they're not clear enough, that he's relying on government records, we don't know the context. Now, this release of this memo throws that into a bit of confusion now, because there is confirmation here that there is and I'm just reading from the Nunes memo here in paragraph 4, there was a source validation report conducted by the FBI to see if they could corroborate some of this. So this is the first hint we have that there was some effort and that there were some successes at corroborating it. We don't know how much, because the memo doesn't clarify that. But even in terms of what you would ask, Jay, in terms of the fact that they included it in the application, does that show something? The answer is we don't know, because we don't know what else was in the application. One would assume that these senior level FBI and DOJ officials, many of whom would have been civil servants who serve from administration to administration, regardless of political affiliation, would have wanted to make sure they did the proper job, because they don't want to put their own reputations on the line. They would have made sure that if they were including any portions of the dossier, it was credible enough and legitimate enough, not just based on the reputation of Mr. Steele, to have included. And the judge, you have to imagine, just in a matter of good faith, would not be willing to just take on faith anything that Mr. Steele said. He'd want to have some legitimate basis to conclude that it was credible in order to reach this probable cause determination. So we've got an inkling now from this of the extent to which they've gone into the memo. We don't know how much what Congressman Nunes said. I have no idea if that's all they've verified or not, because beyond what he just stated and beyond what's in this memo, there's never been any official government confirmation of any effort to corroborate any part.
I have just a broader question then, because the New York Times reporting then has been relatively accurate at this point. So how did if this has been very secret information that the FBI and everybody didn't want disclosed, how did the New York Times come in contact with kind of the timeline in these pieces, and how, you know, the nature of those political leaks have a bent as well. And then just further to this, is there a point where the rest of us who are kind of bored by the drip, drip, drip piece here, will actually get to find out the full pieces of information necessary to actually determine what happened?
In terms of where the leaks came from, there could be any number of sources. It could be people in the course of the investigation who had been questioned by either Director Comey's team or now Mr. Mueller's team who had learned bits and pieces. That's where a lot of the leaks, I think, have come from, with people who've been caught up in the inquiries. There's certainly people within the agencies who leak. That happens every administration. There's always people who leak pieces of detail to reporters. Some of it's authorized leaks. Some of it's obviously not authorized. If those people ever get caught, they'd be fired and possibly prosecuted. But to the other question, in terms of will we learn the full extent of this, the answer is probably some of it, but likely not all of it. When Mr. Mueller is done, there's going to be a report at some point, but part of it's going to be classified, and it's going to be kind of like the JFK files, where it will be a while, it'll be years, till we ever truly know the full story of what occurred here. For obvious reasons, there's sources and methods at stake. There's various avenues of information collection that we just can't expose. And so the relevant parties and stakeholders within government will know what occurred, but for the sake of protecting national security, the public won't ever truly know the full story, but they'll know enough to get context. How much? Yeah, that's a $64,000 question. No one truly knows yet.
Okay, so I guess, go ahead,
my broader question, though, isn't there a point where if it truly is this impactful, and either you could believe two horrible things from the way the story is going, and we don't have enough information. Either we have a national agency willing to collude to help, you know, retain a Hillary Clinton in presidency, or we have a Trump administration who possibly colluded with the Russian government at some point to try and win the White House. I guess I struggle with the fact that, you know, the FBI and everybody here feels like they need to redact and do these things because we need to be protected from that. But it strikes me that either of those outcomes are extraordinarily bad, and the American people actually deserve full understanding at this point.
Well, and it's a fair comment to make. It certainly is. And the problem that emerges, just as the same way the government struggled with this with JFK, same way it struggled with this with 9/11, is that there's a balance they have to draw and have to take between the public's understandable, legitimate need to grasp the full context and the government's need to protect national security and to ensure the protection of American citizens going forward. So, I think that
gets us to a place where no one's going to trust the outcome, you know, because if they're not going to be fully disclose it, this is just kind of an exercise in frustration.
And to be fair, think about it. There are people to this day who don't believe the 9/11 report because parts of it are classified, and there's always going to be people who don't buy it. So is there going to be a portion of the population who's never going to believe the story that comes out of this investigation by Mr. Mueller? Yes, they will never buy it until the full, even be 20 years, 30 years down the line when the full report comes out. They'll be so ingrained in their belief, they won't care what actually was written down. They'll simply never agree with it. The question becomes, from a legal context, what actually occurred? Were crimes actually committed, which we don't know yet? I mean, you mentioned two possibilities. There's a third one. The third one is there were haphazard, amateurish attempts by certain various eccentric players in the campaign to collude, but they didn't actually get anywhere, and the high command wasn't involved in it. And now Trump is so egocentric, he can't stop himself from trying to block the investigation. So that's the third option, which a lot of time is what I tend to view as think what happened. I don't think Trump was nearly coordinated enough to really collude. But
well, and to be fair, there's going to be people who, let's say Trump is not indicted or he's not impeached, there's going to be people that sit there and say, either accuse him of, you know, interfering with Mueller's investigation, not allowing him to do what he needed to do, or somehow or another somebody's going to think that Mueller. I think we can all agree that on either side, there's going to be extremes where they're just going to, no matter what happens, it's not going to be good enough, or it's going to be too much, or vice versa.
Yeah, I think you're just hearing my frustration. I'm tired of this memo story.
Well, you know, can someone finally summarize this?
This is really irritating.
Yeah, no, I'm glad it's finally released, because if I saw one more release the memo hashtag on Twitter, I was just about ready to go crazy. And I just, again, it was like, you know, a lot of this stuff I've almost tuned out a little bit. I mean, part of that is because I'm too busy, interviewing candidates for the Dallas Morning News, people who are running for office. I'm in the middle of doing that and going crazy. And so I didn't have time to keep up on this, which is part of the reason why we invited Brad here, so we could like pepper him with these questions. So, Brad, let me ask you this. You know, in your experience in this kind of work, is the FISA process something that you're comfortable with, or do you think there's some kind of, you know, should there be some reforms of those laws? I mean, because it's kind of interesting that I think a lot of people made a good point, is that, you know, Nunez and others are going crazy about all of this, but meanwhile, they're the ones that keep, you know, reauthorizing these statutes that the FBI is relying upon to do their work. So
yeah.
Do you see any value in that?
Yeah, see, now, and I thought about that. I didn't see anything in this memo that made me actually truly believe that Congressman Nunez or any of the other ones thought there was something wrong with the process. Their issue in terms of the statutory setup and the way the legal system is set up, their issue is they're trying to cure an incurable issue, which is people's inherent biases, which you're never going to be able to pull off because you can't know what's in people's minds. There's an extent to which you put in safeguards to make sure you can minimize problems and minimize rogue, you know, officials. But in the end, the process is going to be the process. So the way the statute's set up, it was reformed 3 years ago in the aftermath of the Snowden leaks. One of the few good things that came out of the Snowden leaks was the creation of a public advocate. Excuse me, which was set up to basically serve as a counterweight to this, you know, sealed, closed, secret process that was being used all these years to submit these applications. Now the FISA court has the ability to bring in this outside lawyer who'd have the necessary clearances to argue against the government's application. That was one of the few good things that came from Snowden's leaks. But beyond that, nothing in this memo points to any part of the statute being an issue, of this particular authorities being a problem. Their issue is that this was all this deep state conspiracy to misuse and to mislead the court. And it's a problem in, sorry, it's a conspiracy in search of a problem. There was nothing here to find, so they cherry pick the facts to create this narrative. And that's unfortunate what we've got here, which in terms of, as you noted, it's a statute and it's a level of authorities that otherwise Congressman Nunes has been fine with. He beat back some of the privacy reforms that people like Senator Paul were trying to put into place, which I personally thought even went too far there. So, you know, this is a lot of political hay for very little gain.
Okay, fair enough. So let's see. How does this does this have anything to do with the Mueller investigation? Is it going to have any effect on the Mueller investigation or no?
As far as I can tell, unless there's more to this, I don't see how this has anything to do with the Mueller investigation. If any of the information they got out of these FISA warrants against Carter Page were somehow used in any of the indictments against Manafort or Gates, and I can't figure out how, or if they were going to be used against General Flynn or against George Papadopoulos, they would have had the right to challenge them in pretrial motions to suppress and to exclude the evidence. There's a provision in the FISA statute that it requires the government to notify you if information being relied upon as part of your prosecution was derived from a FISA warrant. No such application has been submitted. No such motion to suppress has been filed because, as far as we can tell, this has had nothing to do with any of them.
So very quickly, before we let you go, what's going to come of this? What do you think is going to happen? Anything at all, or is it just going to be kind of partisan rancor for the next couple of weeks?
I think we're going to have a bunch of overblown partisan hyperbole for a few weeks. There's going to be a Democratic counter memo. Apparently, Nunes has got a State Department memo he's going to put out. And there's going to be something from Senator Grassley. This is just going to get ridiculous for a little while. And all of it's going to mean nothing if Mueller keeps going and eventually brings more indictments, which it looks like he most likely will at least be getting a guilty plea out of the former Manafort's cohort, and I'm forgetting his last name, something Gates, which could provide all kinds of information through cooperation in terms of what Manafort was doing and in terms of any potential collusion. So I don't see this changing anything in terms of the Mueller investigation. This is just political mud.
Gotcha. Okay. Brad, thanks so much for making time to come on the show.
Yep.
We appreciate it.
Not a problem.
All right. And, you know, you're always welcome back, and I'm sure at some point over the next 2 weeks, maybe. if we had to bring lawyers on the show all the time to kind of go through all the stuff that's happening, we'd have lawyers on every week. But I'm sure something is going to happen at some point that we'll want your legal expertise back on here. And again, what I see is a kind of a level-headed look at everything and not just, you know, kind of knee-jerking. So that's always appreciated.
Well, I appreciate it. No, never. It's never ever a problem. And believe me, there's lawyers who look to other lawyers to get some context, because at a point, this just gets so much into the weeds. You need people who've got the anecdotal experience.
All right. Awesome. Okay. We'll let you go. Brad Moss, everyone, follow him on Twitter. Do we know? We got to bring up his, yeah, we have to tell everybody about his Twitter ID, which is Brad Moss, ESQ. So
yes,
follow him on Twitter.
Keeping the ESQ.
Keeping the ESQ. Now, let me see. Does he have it in his? No, you don't. I have to give you credit. Okay. You have ESQ in your handle, but you don't have it anywhere in your profile. So you're not like Bradley P. Moss Esquire. Even though you could do that. You get 50 characters now.
That seemed even a little obnoxious even for me.
All right, Brad. Thanks again. And good luck with your FISA lawsuit.
Have a good one, guys.
All right. Okay. So that's pretty interesting. That's probably, I think that was more interesting than the actual memo.
The memo. Like, you know, we should have all known to not get excited about the government being able to produce paperwork.
I mean, I was like, get it over. I was in a mode of like, just get it over with already. I am not sitting there thinking there's going to be any major revelations from this. You know, if it was as bad as they said it was, they wouldn't have waited so long to release it. You know, if it was completely nothing, then, you know, Democrats, I think, would have been screaming a lot louder. So I agree with what Brad said. I think there's some ethical issues with some of the people in the top levels of justice and probably the FBI letting their politics get in the way of their work.
Yes.
But this idea,
there's no huge smoking gun, but
no.
I mean, it does reiterate the force that we feel like there's a vast source of unelected government that's mobilized against us,
right?
Or against people who might not vote for Democrats. And that's just, this does consistently kind of emphasize that, you know, and we also have to think we've empowered such unaccountable government with incredible powers to inflict surveillance on all of us. And regardless of Carter Page's issues, the basis for seeking these things seems challenging. And I'm more side with Rand Paul and Justin Amash here, is that that's the larger piece here. And the Republicans, if they really want to have an aligned position here, shouldn't be reauthorizing these laws.
Right.
And then kind of complaining about them. I was like, well, pick a side.
Yeah, that's the best part. It's like, you know, you have Nunez and others sitting there talking about the supposed abuses of these. Well, you're the guys that keep allowing them to do it. Yeah.
Everybody acts like they don't actually work at the place that could solve it.
Well, that's always the biggest thing. It's like members of Congress are hilarious for being self-righteous. You know, they're very good at doing that. And then people sit there and say, well, you know, you guys wrote the laws that allow this stuff to go on, you know. It was kind of like with the IRS thing. I understood the anger, but it was like getting rid of the head of the IRS isn't really going to change the problem. You know, it's like you have to change the law in order for this kind of thing to go away. Because it doesn't matter if the administration changed. You can find somebody that'll head up the IRS that would be okay. But if once a Democrat comes in, things go right back to the way they were. And nothing has changed according to that. So if you know, a Democrat wins in 2020 and they bring in a new IRS head, and that guy wants to sit there and deny conservative groups tax exempt status, they'll be able to do it again.
Yeah, because we want to be able to do it to the other side or something. That, I mean, and there's a point where, you know, you have to decide the proper role and piece of government and actually like consistently mean it. But, you know, to pivot to what I think the third story that was missed this week is, how idiotic was it to step on such a successful State of the Union with this dumb memo story?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand. This is one of the things about, you know, the Democratic Party is amazingly inept right now. The fact that there are people still wanting Hillary Clinton to run again.
Oh, goes God to, bless them.
Yeah, goes to show that you know that they don't have
they
anybody.
They should, Jay. That's a fantastic idea.
But it's like Republicans are just as good at getting in the way of their own success as they are anything else.
Yeah, amazing week. I mean, in that speech rated by independents, 43% of Democrats who watched it like it by a CBS poll. I mean, it was an incredibly successful State of the Union. And to our earlier point, one of the things Trump said that I was like, oh God, I wish they do that, was to really make federal workers accountable like the rest of us who have real jobs are.
Yeah.
That would be phenomenal. I mean, just reading, there was a piece Inez Felch wrote where the levels of, just read about how hard it is to fire any of these people anywhere. And then be surprised that we have these memos and this back and forth and all of this nonsense. I mean, I would hope that'd be the bigger takeaway from this memo, is the amount of people that are working on these things, the amount of bias that's inherent in the system. And thankfully, luckily, maybe it hasn't hurt or directly harmed anybody, but it will eventually. And that's the bigger problem here. This memo and this stuff is a sideshow, and really attacking the unelected bureaucratic state would be a much better aim than these nonsensical like memo releases by the Republican Party.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. It's just that, of course, what it does is it brings them back to the fact that they'd have to actually start doing their jobs.
Yeah, that's the different problem. They can't go on TV every night and talk about that.
Yeah, they actually have to like pass the kind of difficult legislation that's going to require this kind of thing. And that goes to the president and anybody else who sits there and complains about this stuff as if they have no authority to make these changes. You know, it's like, well, you guys, again, it's like they do this because by statute they're allowed to do it, which you passed or somebody in your role passed. In years past that you can now change. So,
yeah, I mean, the one thing that the takeaway from this memo that I disagree with a little bit of our guest on is how we have to protect all the content that is the basis for the FISA warrant. Like how much the FBI and all the DOJ, everybody got their panties in a wad about releasing the content. And then you read the memo and you're like, seriously, this is what you guys were like hemming and hawing over whether we could read. It makes me feel like they don't really understand what should be classified and what isn't really that big of a freaking deal. You know, because they just presume everything they're doing is so important that I'm not sure they can tease apart the difference. So I do feel that at some point, you know, too bad, you're going to have to be held accountable to whatever this mess is. And we all deserve to know what happened in the 2016 election. And since now you've made this giant mess, I think you owe it to the American people. You don't have to reveal exact sources, but you can reveal the basis for what you submitted these warrants under. I see no reason that we aren't owed that explanation.
No, I agree. It definitely there is definitely an issue with respect to that. And yeah, I don't think everybody is 100% pure on either side of this. You know, it's like we talked about Devin Nunes, but Adam Schiff is just as much of a slime ball.
They're both idiots.
Yeah, I mean, Schiff has been leaking stuff like crazy. I mean, he's obviously, him and people that he knows behind so many of these leaks have been coming out of the Intelligence Committee. And, you know, he's convinced that, you know, Donald Trump is a puppet of Vladimir Putin, and they've got their own issues on that whole side. So I think that's what it kind of devolves down into, and it just drives me crazy because it's like, enough already from both of you. If you've got something substantive, let's hear it already. Stop hiding. You know,
where I've had it. I'm like, I don't care if it hurts something. You need to fess up.
Right. You have Republicans sitting there saying that Andrew McCabe testified that they wouldn't have been able to get the FISA warrant without the dossier. Democrats say that's not true. Fine. Release the goddamn testimony, what he said, so everybody can just read it. Why is it such a big secret? If that's what you're saying,
everything
publicly,
they do is so important. Because that's the thing. If we all figured out what they did wasn't actually that important or that meaningful, the jig would be up, you know, because we already know that. We know the government actually isn't the most important factor in our lives. And this, you know, they need to keep that presumption. And that's what drives me more nuts about this whole thing. It's like, if it's really this big of a deal, as Adam Schiff says, we should actually get all of the information.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I mean, everything should come out. You know, I understand, you know, the warrant probably has information in there that they used to acquire, you know, the application, I should say, not the warrant, the application probably has information in there that might be sensitive that they can't. Okay, you can redact some of that information, but...
Yeah, but I mean, really, is it really that big of a deal? Oh, some guy told us about Carter Page. Just erase the guy's name.
No, well, I'm saying, I mean, but some of it...
Like
some
it's
of
so
it,
hard to redact this.
No, I understand, but some of it has to be redacted. I mean, you are talking about, you know, espionage and possible espionage. Not so much on the part of United States citizens. They may have just been caught up in it, but at the same time, it could have been other players, and you don't want to release that information, but... At the very least, you could release enough to get to the heart of it to say, this is actually how we were able to obtain the warrant. The dossier was a piece of information, but the judge signed off on it because of this. And right now, we just don't know that. We just don't know what it is. And that's a little troubling.
And it is troubling, though, to be using, you know, basically opposition research as the basis for a warrant. They should have used something else. And that was just dumb.
Well, I mean, I'm saying, but I mean, if like it's only if it's dumb, only if that actually was the you know, if it was in there and the FBI was able to confirm some of the information in the dossier. That's another thing we don't know, because Devin Nunez goes on there and says the only thing that was confirmed in the dossier is there's a country named Russia and a person named Carter Page exists. But, I can't imagine agents at the FBI are sitting there saying, well, we've got this information here. We don't know. Did you check on it? I mean, come on. I don't know.
Have you read James Comey's Twitter feed? I'm having less and less confidence in the FBI.
Yeah, well, he was never an agent, though, so that's part of the problem. I think, you know, you're not part of the rank and file. You're a prosecutor, so... And yeah, he's a little flaky anyway, so...
I'm just saying, if you read his Twitter feed, I'm feeling less confident about the FBI, mostly because he's just really emotional.
Yeah, he is. It is. The whole thing is a circus, and I'm just like... You know, get back to doing stuff. You know, it's funny. I had lunch with Scott Linsicum several weeks ago, and we were talking about how when Trump went away during like Christmas, the Christmas week, he was down in Mar-a-Lago or something. He wasn't on Twitter, and he wasn't talking to the cameras, and there wasn't. And so there were just people having these discussions about the tax bill. And if it was going to be good or bad, and he was like, it was great. He goes, we were having these conversations about policy, you know, it felt so strange and surreal to discuss actual policy for a week, you know, because it was like, it brought back these great memories, you know? And I was like, he was right. You know, it was like, I remember that too. You know, we're so much caught up in so much of this junk all the time. It's like, yeah, you know what? And now they're running out of time already on DACA if they're going to do anything. They've only got a month left. And, you know.
Well, I mean, Trump made him a pretty generous offer, to be honest.
Oh, he did. Well, that's what I'm saying.
I think he called their bluff.
Oh, he did.
They don't care.
He did. He definitely called their bluff. And, you know, unfortunately, you have like the Breitbart people that are calling Trump. They're calling him, what do they call him? Amnesty Don.
Amnesty Don or something. Who cares?
Amnesty Don. You know, it's just silly. It is silly. I mean, but yeah, the idea is that you in order to get something done, you're going to have to get them both sides. And I think Trump made a very, very good offer. And if the Democrats, you know, sit there and say no, then that's completely on them. They're just going to screw it up the way they screw. Can you imagine? The Democrats are so inept that they screwed up the shutdown. You know, I mean, they actually had to like go crawling back and say, okay, yeah, we'll do it. it was
so
remarkable.
Funny. I was like, that's like what is a Lethal Weapon, like kind of challenging Mel Gibson to not like play Russian roulette.
Yeah.
It's like, we're the party who doesn't give a crap about government. Like, we care if it shuts down.
I know. And you know, for all the criticism that I have about Trump, is I do respect the fact that the guy is like fearless. He just doesn't care. You know, he's like, yeah, you guys shut down the government. Too bad. You know, go ahead. It'll stay shut as long, you know, but you guys got to come back and agree to this. And they did, you know, because he was, you know, Trump was just going to be like, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to be the one that blinks here, Chuck. You're going to be the one.
The one thing
blinking.
You know is that Trump has vanity, so like they had to realize he's never going to crack.
Yeah.
He will enjoy beating us over the head with this.
Exactly. It's like he would allow it to go on for weeks.
He gave him a big like club and he was like, "Let's do it."
That's exactly what it was, you know, and I mean something as simple as him showing up in person at the March for Life, you know, rally, which, you know, George W. Bush never actually went there in person. He kind of did a video thing, but everybody figured that's what Trump was going to do. He's like, Trump's like, hell no. There's a crowd of people there. I'm going to show up. You know, that's one of the moving the embassy to Jerusalem. Every president since in the last 30 years has promised to do that, Democrats included. Trump did it, and everybody was like, oh, you know, it's like, well, okay, he just did what he said he was going to do. And, of course, the Middle East isn't burning down the way they thought it was.
People miss why he got votes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you guys get all upset about this or that, and he tweets, but like, he actually just did stuff he said, which, you know, for God's sakes, we've been desperate for.
Yeah. Now, I mean, on the other hand, yeah. I think he's bad at selling it. So that's the reason why he's still sitting there at 40%. I said to somebody, and I said, if he turned his Twitter feed off for a month, and he stopped, and you went to the end, if like right now, between now and the end of February, if he didn't tweet or if he didn't really do anything, his approval rating would rise 12 to 15 points. he would be 55-56%. Simply based on the economy, the stock market, the tax cut. You, there's a lot of people out there. I know I was happy. My paycheck, you know, went up. My take-home pay went up about $100. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, that this should have been the story that was running this week. This exactly. is the thing. Just sit back and be like, have the conviction that your policies are about to kick in and just be like, just keep going. You know, I think he could really hit it out of the park if he hammered on the federal worker thing.
Yeah.
To be honest, because that frustrates the heck out of everybody.
If he was to do DACA, get it done. And you know, because I mean, people could sit there and you were talking about the politics of it. And, you know, people are sensitive to the fact that somebody who may be 28 years old now, but was brought here as a 7-year-old, through no fault of their own, to sit there, if they're a productive member of society, to suddenly say, well, the sins of the father, too bad, you're out of here. You know, if they meet certain criteria, like Trump said, then they can stay and that kind of thing. If they're not, you know, if they don't have criminal records or anything, a lot of people support that. And so, you know, if you're the principal thing, like, you know, Cruz is saying, we can't do it. I understand that the politics of it is a different story, though. And so if he did that and then he could go through the federal workers thing, which I think would be terrific. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's so much there to do, but it's kind of like, stop with this, you know, let the Democrats fumble around thinking that there's this Russian collusion connection that they haven't been able to prove and nothing is really there. You know, but when you get caught up in chasing squirrels, like trying to prove that the FBI is part of a conspiracy to bring down your campaign, like you said, we just talked about, all this other stuff just kind of gets lost.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mistake. But at the same time, like, we'll be arguing about something else next week.
I don't know.
I mean, it's a fascinating. It's like whatever next week's outrage, we'll totally forget about this. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. there's a Law and Order episode where Ben Stone says something about a case that they weren't going to retry again. And he says, what do you mean we're not going to do it again? And he goes, the people will be outraged. And Adam Schiff, of course, you know, the good Adam Schiff, the DA from Law and Order, says, he says, he goes, the people will be outraged until the next outrage hits the front page. You know, so that's kind of like the way it is with government. You know, it's like everybody's outraged until the next outrage comes along. And then people are outraged about that. And they've forgotten about the previous outrage.
Yep. So next week, this won't even matter.
Yeah. Won't even matter. So hopefully, though, next week, if you guys are listening to this, there is a documentary, and I'm just going to kind of give a preview. I don't like to do previews of the podcast in case something doesn't work out, but I'll take the risk. So there is a documentary on Netflix called The 7-5. It is about a police precinct in East New York, Brooklyn, in the late 80s and early 90s when crime was like rampant in New York City. Just to give you an idea, in New York City this past year had 293 homicides. The lowest that murder rate has been in something like 70 or 80 years or something like that. In 1990 in New York, I think there were 2,200 homicides in 1990. The precinct, this one police precinct, had 110 murders alone in one precinct. And this is like 12 square blocks of Brooklyn. And so it was a very, that was a time during the crack wars, you know, cocaine was going for like a kilo of cocaine was going for like $35,000. Lots of money, and you had a lot of corrupt cops at the time. We're not talking about Serpico, where these bag men were going around collecting a few hundred dollars, you know, about $800 a month. We're talking thousands and thousands of dollars. These guys went and actually started working for major drug dealers. They weren't cops. They were criminals wearing police uniforms. And it's really fascinating. And there's a couple of people that are in there. The two main people that are in there are Michael Dowd and another man by Ken Urell. And Ken Urell, if everything works out, he's going to be a guest on this podcast next week. We're going to talk about the movie, and we'll talk about some of the stuff that wasn't in the movie and get some other information from him. So that should be pretty fascinating. It should be kind of fun. It's a break from the politics. We're gonna you know, hit the brakes on politics and kind of turn towards some intrigue of New York City corruption, cop, police corruption, drug dealers, all that kind of good stuff. Lighthearted fare, you know? So it's going to be, you know, the real fun stuff. But I mean, it will be a break from politics, and you know, these guys are, you know, they have a you know, both of them have interesting stories to tell despite their, you know, obvious criminal behavior. The stories are interesting, and the characters are interesting. So I'm looking forward to that. So, all right, well, that's gonna do it. We've been almost going for an hour here. So nice episode. Brad Moss was great, and you know, we are approaching episode 80. You know, a couple months will be episode 100, which is gonna be, you know, I don't think we can do one of those Seinfeld 100. I couldn't go back and edit all that stuff and be like, this is the greatest moments from, you know, the Fifth Estate. That's a lot of work. I don't know if I can do that, but. All right. Well, everyone, that is going to do it. Hope you enjoy your weekend. Amy, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
And listen up for next week. And Amy and I have to figure out a way to end the show. We've got to come up with a question. Neil and I were always on the opposite ends of certain things. Amy and I have to come up with something, or doesn't even necessarily have to be like me against her. It could be like both of us teaming up against a guest and figure something out, or just kind of ask a guest like a really goofy question and then we have to answer it as well. I don't know. We'll figure something out. We'll come up with something, but pretty soon. But anyway, I'm Jay Caruso for Amy Otto. That will do it for this edition of the Fifth Estate. We'll see you next time.